Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Movies and booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Deirdre Malumbi, Ali Ryan, and Dean McGuinness are here for Movies and Booze, a bank holiday Movies and Booze. Good afternoon,
afternoon.
To you all. And I suppose the much on. I think this Springsteen movie is some people are just going to go, oh my God, it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to my life. And other people will rip it apart because there's a series of small mistakes in it. It's kind of almost Marvel level obsession it will attract from people, I think.
I actually went on IMDb this week and some people were review slamming the Springsteen movie, talking about his albums. And I'm like, you haven't seen the movie and you're just expressing your opinions about Bruce Springsteen, full stop. So I was kind of frustrated by that. So I would say...
because it concentrates on recording one album, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, Nebraska. Yeah. And I suppose if that's not your favorite album, then you'll go, why that one?
Yeah, exactly. But no, it's interesting. So the director here is Scott Cooper, who people might know. He directed Crazy Heart, which earned Jeff Bridges his Oscar. He directed Black Mass, Hostiles, Out of the Furnace. So it's a really interesting director who they've given this kind of project to. And I'll kind of get into it when I talk about the review. But it's not your typical kind of Oscar vying musical biopic, because as we know, with the likes of like Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, however many others over the years, like this genre has very much become associated with it's just baiting for an Oscar, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's very, very good. And as well as kind of looking at the production of that 1982 album, Nebraska, you see Bruce Springsteen kind of exploring a possible new romance, battling inner demons. So yeah, there's a few things going on in this movie, which I appreciated.
And the other film, of course, is Frankenstein. Now, don't tell us what happens in the end. a story from which we're all totally unfamiliar. Is there a reason to remake Frankenstein?
Well, this has been a passion project for Guillermo del Toro, who people might know from like The Shape of Water, Pan's Labyrinth, Kronos, however many other movies over the years. He did a production of Pinocchio, actually, for Netflix, which won the Best Animated Feature Oscar a number of years ago. So this has been like something that Guillermo del Toro has wanted to do for years and years. And now he's kind of been given like the big Netflix budget to do it. It will only be in cinemas for like a limited amount of time, and then it will be going to Netflix. So okay. I reckon a lot of people wait for it for streaming. But having seen it on the big screen, I would say that if you know, like this story, and if you like this particular kind of fantasy horror type of genre, that it is worth seeing on the big screen, because it's quite gorgeous to look at, I have to say.
Okay, and a wheat beer today, Dean, the classics.
Yeah, we're looking at how politics and regulations have shaped the flavours of beers. The oldest piece of consumer legislation in the world is the Reinheitsgebot, the German purity laws that were enacted in April of 1516, so they're over 500 years old.
You know, German purity laws sounds like something else. It's kind of very dodgy and Nazi-ish, really. But yes, you have mentioned them before.
Yeah, and... Well, as you say, we're looking at how they have influenced things, and how when you go back to that time, people assumed that the purity laws were all about quality and so on. But in reality, it was a bit of populist legislation, and it was populist legislation that was also subject to some lobbying by people who were in the know and were able to influence things for their own benefit. So funny enough, without that lobbying, we wouldn't have these beers.
Okay. Interesting. Maybe you can tell me who this sinister forces were later on in the show. Someone texts in to say, does this version of Frankenstein actually resemble the original book in any way? Because none of the previous ones did, really.
I would say so. There are elements like, so in the original novel, because I studied it in college, I'm a nerd that way, there's the framing device in that.
Well, you had to. It probably wasn't optional.
Yeah. Well, I loved it, so I could nerd over it quite a bit. There are certain elements that are added to it, but I think it's quite faithful to the original Mary Shelley book. Like, it has the framing device, which a lot of the adaptations of Frankenstein abandon, in that the whole story is Victor Frankenstein is kind of found in the middle of the ice by the sea captain, and then he tells his story to the sea captain, and then later on we get the creature's perspective. Okay. So that framing device is still there. And there are other bits of it, like thematically, I would say it's very loyal to the Mary Shelley book. Yeah. So if you're a fan of it, it is worth checking out.
Another texter says, Hollywood has got so shamelessly unoriginal. I would say you could account for 90% of its output at this stage with music biopics, remakes and superhero movies. That's a terrible thing to say. Say, for instance, just in showbiz news, we're going to be talking about Presumed Innocent 2, a reboot of Miami Vice, an X-Men reboot, a reboot of A Christmas Carol, and Stranger Things Season 5, all totally original work.
Don't shoot the messenger. Yeah.
But actually, we are starting with something, because David Chase of Sopranos fame is back making something, and it sounds like about a real-life thing, MK Ultra, which is like this kind of, they experimented with drugs on people.
Yeah, it's such an interesting concept. So yeah, obviously, legendary Sopranos creator. I'm going to be cancelled for saying this. I've never seen The Sopranos. I remember trying to watch it when I was in college and I literally had subtitles on. This is before I was more, I don't know, mature with my understanding of the world. So I need to go back and watch it. So I'm just going to say that now.
But you can't be cancelled for that.
But
racism and stuff.
I should have watched it though. Like, I've seen all the greats, like The Wire, nearly every show, but the only two I've never seen is The Sopranos and Game of Thrones. They're the only two series I've never watched. They're pretty important in our cultural, like...
I'd be a hell of a weekend.
Yes, that's coming soon. But yeah, so David Chase is back, obviously, so I know who he is, obviously. So MK Ultra, so it's a new HBO series. Obviously, HBO brought out The Sopranos as well. So basically, I only learned about this when I was looking into this. So MK Ultra was a real-life 1950s mind control experience which took place during the Cold War. It's really freaking me out actually even talking about it. Now, the actual show is based on a non-fiction book, Project Mind Control, Sidney Gottlieb, I'm going to say. He was kind of known as the biggest spy master called the Black Sorcerer. This is what this guy's name was during the Cold War. So he basically headed the psychedelic program. So they conducted dangerous, deadly mind control experiments on some willing but some unwilling subjects during the Cold War. So they were trying to figure out if they could control people's minds and brainwash people into confessing government secrets of their country. And I think it's going to be insane to explore all of that. So obviously he hasn't been on screen since 2007. Am I right in saying that's when it wrapped? Yeah, that in 2007.
Wow, yeah.
So it's a big deal for him to be back. I would say that the story is going to be amazing, because the one thing I know about The Sopranos is just, it's not just the acting, but it's the script, it's the story. It's going to be very military focused, which is so different from The Sopranos, I think, as well. I think it's going to be very, very different. But Chase hasn't written anything since The Sopranos.
So what's he been doing?
Yeah, what has he been doing? Has he been reading these books for years? That's what's exciting me. Also, like, they're saying it's kind of going to be an espionage paranoia mixed with moral decay. And obviously, you know, The Sopranos and all those kind of amazing movies are in some way King Lear wrapped up, you know, like the kind of main persons, you love them, you hate them. In terms of casting, no news yet, but they're looking at names like John Hamm, and Elizabeth Moss has been floated early as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if we got some people that are unknown too, because if this is going to be something we need to really buy into. But I love these sorts of shows, because especially when it's based on reality, to know that these things actually happen. I think now in the modern mobile phone age, we're starting to see like war tactics in real life that have actually been happening the whole time. So I'm very interested to see how this is going to go. But there's definitely going to be some John Hamm character in there that we hate, but we also secretly love.
I'm watching The Sopranos for the first time at the moment, says the listener. One of the most surprising things about it is that it's hilarious. Paulie is one of the great comedy characters in TV history. Which is true.
Interesting. I'm excited to get to know Tony Soprano. When I'm back, I'll have watched and I'll be wrecked.
It makes you want to eat pasta.
Oh, great.
Just all the time.
But no, it's a good one. And it's nice to talk about a show that actually isn't, and no badness to Netflix, but it's HBO. It's like a different level.
Yeah,
it's nice that they're getting involved, because a lot of the news lately, like you said, are reboots or it's a Netflix series that's been bought. HBO, you just know that they are going to make this an exceptional
show.
And
they were the originals,
really,
for all this kind of stuff. Right, so the second show is All's Fair.
Yes.
And now this is, when's it starting on? Disney Plus.
Disney Plus. It's actually a Hulu series, but obviously in Europe, Disney Plus stream all their shows. So it's starting on November 4th. I have high expectations for it now. So it's created by Ryan Murphy, who obviously created American Horror Show, Nip Tuck, Glee originally as well. When you mix those in, I just think it's so funny. But he's got such a good reputation now for just casting these shows so well. But it was a bit of a surprise that he cast Kim Kardashian as one of the lead stars of the show, which I think people were like, is this the right decision? But she did do well on American Horror Story. She was on one of the seasons recently. So basically the show is about a team of high powered female divorce attorneys, and they leave a male dominated firm.
But doesn't she have a real life law degree?
Yes, this is what I love about it.
So that qualifies her to act as a lawyer.
Can I just say, yeah. I also do as well.
Yeah.
And I've been working as a paralegal for the last 2 years. So I love legal dramas. Even before I got my law degree, I was obsessed with Suits, Ally McBeal when I was growing up as well, The Good Wife. But I'm interested to see how she plays in this. So she only just actually did the bar in California 2 months ago. So nobody knows yet if she's passed or not, but she passed the baby bar. But her father, obviously Robert Kardashian, very famously was in the OJ Simpson trial. And he actually helped Kim with her very first divorce before he passed away. So she's obviously really into all this. But there's another amazing cast. There's other cast members there as well. Like you have Naomi Watts, Glenn Close, Sarah Paulson, Carrington Lane, really, really good. But obviously Kim, it looks like she's playing the main character. It's a character called Alora Grant, and she's the high profile divorce lawyer. And yeah, it's meant to be very high stakes, breakups, scandals, secrets, all that sort of stuff. Kind of sounds like a Nip Tuck, but in the legal world to me, because I don't think it's going to be like American Horror Story. I don't think we're going to be like having jump scares on it. But I think it could do really well. I do think legal dramas do well. And since Suits kind of, they kind of got a whole new set of audiences when Meghan Markle married Prince Harry, because she's on Suits. Nothing has really filled the void of a legal drama yet. So I think this could be the next one. So I would say this is going to be the first season of many. And I think Kim could maybe get a nomination for something. I'm hearing that she's really, really good in it. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that's what they're saying.
Just hearing through the grapevine, like they're putting her center.
It's going to be difficult to look at her and believe she's someone else.
And when I first saw the casting, I'm like, how is Naomi Watts sitting back and being like her backup dancer for Kim Kardashian? Naomi Watts, like one of the biggest actors in the world. But I do trust Ryan Murphy that he'd put the right person there. And again, she's the only one on the cast that actually has a law degree and is hopefully passing the bar and has worked in firms. Obviously, she's gone to the White House as well. She's got people freed from...
Lots of people have acted as lawyers who didn't have law degrees and done so very successfully.
But what I mean is, like, I do have a bit of a high expectation. Like, if there's anything she could pull off...
A Ryan Murphy job, it'll be kind of schlocky and a bit camp.
And even like this week,
they're not worrying about the minutiae of the law.
But this week they did loads of world premieres. It was almost like a movie premiere that did it, and she looked obviously unreal. So all of the headlines were about her looking amazing, and it was her 45th birthday. So I was like, you can never separate the two. It was like Kim Kardashian celebrates 45th birthday instead of like Kim Kardashian at the premiere of All's Fair. So they kind of mixed it together, but that's also what directors and what networks are looking for these days. Sadly, in a way, they want people that are famous. They want people who have followers. Like, I know actor friends of mine that go for shows and they're asked in their like entry forms, application forms, how many followers do you have on Instagram?
Oh, really?
How many do you have on TikTok? So someone like Kim, who can actually act a bit and has a degree, and you're going to get like millions and millions of followers. Like, it's a good recipe. And then someone like Ryan, who could probably direct anyone. Do you know what I mean? Like, so... I have high hopes.
Okay, we'll see. Acts a bit. Lawyers a bit. Right, so tell us about our first beer today, Dean.
First beer, Meisel's Original. So this is Hefeweiss. Hefe is German for yeast. And the reference there is that this is a beer with yeast still left in the beer. So it the yeast is suspended in the beer, and it gives the beer a slightly cloudy appearance. Mm-hmm. Now, for the Reinheitsgebot, that at the time when it was enacted, it said that beer should... have three ingredients, water, barley and hops. They didn't understand about the yeast at the time. They didn't know that yeast existed as a microorganism. And there were things that they did at the time that allowed them to brew beer, but effectively they were doing tricks because they worked. So for example, there would be a brewer's stick that they would stir the beer with, and that stick would have yeast on it unbeknownst to them. Mm. And as they stirred the beer with it, or they would take the lees of the last batch of beer, and that would have yeast in it, and that would trigger the ingredients. But most people think of the Reinheitsgebot as saying that there's four ingredients, water, malt, hops and yeast. In fact, there's an exception to it where it allowed for the use of wheat in brewing beer if the beer was brewed for the aristocracy.
Okay.
So what it was the Reinheitsgebot was brought out because the regulators at the time were concerned about the availability of wheat for making bread. And they wanted to restrict the use of wheat in brewing so that wheat would be available for making bread. The Reinheitsgebot was more actually a pricing thing. It sets the price of beer at a very specific level. And ironically, given the way that pricing is controlled these days, it set it at a maximum level. So you couldn't charge above a certain point for a beer. Now our legislation sets pricing at a minimum level. But because of that, they were concerned that if brewers had the ability to increase their profits by increasing prices taken away from them, that they might use unusual ingredients that might be cheaper in the beer.
Yeah.
And that's where the drive for the specification of the ingredients came from.
Okay.
So it wasn't so much that it had to have those ingredients. It was more that it could have only those ingredients and not other ingredients. At the time, they could use quite unusual things, like people may be aware of absinthe, which is kind of associated with having hallucinogenic qualities in...
And making you go blind.
Yeah. In beer as well, there were some ingredients that were being used. St. John's wort is one which some people can feel can have medicinal qualities, but if it's used inappropriately, it can cause some really weird things with people. So that was the thrust of it. So without the aristocracy lobbying to allow them to have wheat beers, then wheat beers could have been eradicated in Bavaria.
Oh my word.
And we would have had no wheat beer.
Okay.
So anyway, this one, it is classic wheat beer. So the source of the flavors and beers, the two main places that flavors and beer is going to come from is the ingredients and the process. With the two beers that we're tasting, one of them, it's very much from the process that the flavors are coming from. So the predominant flavors in the beer are coming from the fermentation. Wheat ale is brewed with, and this gets very technical, wheat ale yeast.
Really?
So what you've got, that particular type of yeast, it likes to ferment at a warm temperature. And when it ferments at a warm temperature, it tends to produce fruity flavors in the beer. Now, it's also a specific type of yeast. It's called a puff yeast, which is a phenolic off flavor yeast, which is a yeast that can produce spicy flavors. So the predominant flavors in wheat beers are ripe banana, very much the yellow banana, you know, the really kind of richer banana flavor, and clove. And for those flavors, now different people, I find myself, I'm less sensitive to clove. My wife is very smelly as well, is quite sensitive to clove. And as I was tasting this, I was saying, oh, I didn't think the clove was coming through. And she said, oh, wax of clove, huge amount of clove in it. If you're tasting a wheat beer and you can't get the clove, there's a trick you can do. If you get a small amount of the beer just behind your teeth and then just aspirate the beer, which is just breathe in through your teeth and through your mouth slightly open, that'll pull the clove flavor through and it'll accentuate it. So if I'm looking for clove, I tend to do that. My wife, she just smells it from a distance.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's what they can do. What temperature are you supposed to drink this at, actually?
It tends to be served at a reasonably chilled temperature, so kind of 5 to 8 degrees would be there. It is a highly carbonated beer. So a standard beer that you would get would have a carbonation level of in the region of 2.2 to 2.8 volumes of carbon dioxide, which is the measure that they use for the amount of buzz or fizz that there is in beer. With wheat beers, it's up at 3.5, so kind of a good kind of 30-40% higher than the normal beer. What that translates into is when you pour the beer, it will tend to pour with quite a large head. And if you're pouring it and you're not careful with it, it will pour with a huge head. The style of glass that's used then is quite a tall glass because you get an amount of solid liquid underneath and then about 2 to 3 fingers of head, which is the basically a finger of head is
a
measure
size of
head,
a finger.
The width of your finger.
Because it just strikes me, if it was too cold, you'd kill all the nice bits of it.
Yeah, you've got like in this, you've got ripe banana, but as well as that, you've got soft fruit flavors, peach, apricot. There's tropical fruit flavors in there, but it's delicate tropical fruit flavors. It doesn't have the acidity to give you pineapple, and there is no bitterness in the beer. Sometimes when you've got tropical fruit with bitterness, that comes through as grapefruit, but you're not getting that. So the tropical fruit flavors are coming through as cantaloupe and honeydew melon, which are quite gentle fruit flavors. flavors. They're quite subtle flavors. You've got an amount of spiciness. The clove is there. Creamy nutmeg is another kind of spice flavor that's coming through on it. And you've got a roundness in the body of the beer because it's a relatively sweet beer because of the absence of bitterness. So it's not particularly sweet, but when you have a lot of bitterness in a beer, that balances out the sweetness. So with the absence of bitterness, you've got an amount of sweetness
absolutely
that you notice in it.
One of our listeners wants to know, I absolutely love Dunkel Weiss. Why is it so hard to find it in Ireland? It's almost never available.
It is, yeah. Some of the people that are importing Dunkel Weiss are doing it as a kind of an autumn-winter seasonal beer, so you might see it on the shelves now a little bit more. What you find is there's a range of different styles of wheat beers. So Hefe Weiss is the classic cloudy version. Crystal Weiss is a filtered version, so it has the yeast filtered out of it, and it tends to have lighter fruity flavors and is more suitable to kind of spring summertime. Dunkel Weiss, then when you're coming into the darker months, people tend to move a little bit towards darker beers.
That's when you'll see it.
Yeah.
Shane in Cork says, I've never seen The Sopranos or Game of Thrones either. I am not a sheep. I definitely will never watch Game of Thrones. Maybe I will watch The Sopranos, but probably not, says Shane. Tell her to watch The Sopranos, but don't bother with anything beyond the third series of Game of Thrones.
Right.
Same goes for Lost. Well, you probably know the last two series were disregarded.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah. My staff at the time were waking up at like 6 o'clock in the morning to watch the finale, and they were all desperately unhappy. But I have my homework book out now. I'll come back with notes.
Right. So what would you like to do first, Dee?
Well, we start with Springsteen.
We'll start with Bruce with The Boss coming up after this.
I was trying to write this song. It's about struggle, feeling lost, being alone, and it goes something like this.
Bruce, we're rolling, so whenever you're ready.
Last night I dreamed that I was a child.
Nobody but Bruce can tell stories like these.
Out where the pines grow.
But I don't understand why an artist would make this record.
Wild and tall.
Okay, that's Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. Is Jeremy Allen White singing in this?
I think so. I really should have checked that before.
Yeah. Dean says yes.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
An unimpeachable source. The man who brings beer always tells the truth. Right. Okay. So, yes. Okay. It's just because I know that's going to be something people are going to be texting anyway. So, where's the start? Where does it end? Kind of thing without giving away spoilers. I suppose that it's how can you spoil a film like this when everybody knows his life story?
I mean, the very opening scene is Jeremy Allen White performing Born to Run, and he's absolutely fantastic in it. So, I mean, immediately you know that he's going to be able to deliver on stage presence. He has like this kind of, you know, sweaty but absolute like dedication to his music and to his art. And then the end of the film, I suppose, because like we are looking at like generic and movie kind of conventions here. All through the film, there are these black and white flashbacks to Bruce's past with his mother and father. His father, by the way, is played by Stephen Graham, who people will remember from Adolescence, and he's great. Gabby Hoffman as well as Bruce's mother was really impressive. And it kind of ends with, I suppose, like perhaps a moment of kind of reconciliation. But yeah, the majority of the film does focus on the production of this album, Nebraska. And what I really appreciated about it was, I feel like a lot of musical biopics kind of focus on like these big dramatic speeches that like, you know, the lead singer or that the band makes and all these like big moments and the big performances and stuff like that. Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, which is the title of the film, a bit of a mouthful, but anyway.
It is, yeah. Does that make any sense, Deliver Me From Nowhere?
Okay. Yeah. It kind of focuses on like the smaller, more insular moments of Bruce Springsteen and kind of what he was going through in terms of like inner demons and like his mental health. And it kind of, you know, shows this like breakdown towards the end of the film. So yeah, I could really appreciate that. It was just that bit different to other examples of this genre that I've seen. And I have to talk, of course, about Jeremy Allen White's performance because it has gotten a lot of Oscar buzz around it. People will naturally be curious of like, you know, how does he portray the boss? And I thought that he was very, very good because it's such an admirably understated performance. This is a guy who's like resistance to fame, doesn't really like reflecting on the past. He's contemplative, he's considerate with his words. And while he like comes alive on the stage and when he's performing, he's very quite introverted off it. He's this tortured artist, but he's not self-indulgent either, which you can see so much. Like I couldn't help as I was watching the film, but comparing it to like A Complete Unknown, which to be honest, I wasn't mad about.
I didn't like that movie.
Well, a lot of people were mixed about it.
Yeah. I just found Bob Dylan kind of, or Timothy Chalamet's portrayal of him anyway, absolutely despicable. Like I really, really didn't like the guy. Whereas in this film, even though like Springsteen as a character, he makes some ropey decisions, he is quite stubborn, and he's quite unkind to his love interest, Faye Romano, who's played by Odessa Young, who's like kind of a fictionalized character, but he does kind of manage to keep you on side, which I thought was quite impressive. So like the humanity is there, he's, you know, a flawed person, but you still kind of find yourself rooting for him. So yeah, there was a lot more depth to this movie than I was expecting, and I was really quite impressed by it.
Yeah. Now, as I understand it, he had a string of successful albums, mm-hmm. and he was very famous, and so Nebraska was kind of like, I'll just record this in my bedroom almost.
Because
I remember reading that when they took the actual the tapes they'd recorded, was really difficult to master them because they'd been so badly recorded.
Yeah.
So is it just about making an album, or is it more to do with he was kind of recoiling from his, from where he found himself, because he wasn't a kid from New Jersey anymore. He was, you know, he was this big star.
It's a bit about both. Like it is about like music production and kind of experimenting with this new type of way to make art, which I found like really interesting. Like it goes into quite a bit of detail about how Bruce was kind of looking at, you know, how at the time there was an evolution where there was a move away from records and kind of towards tape cassettes, and how he wanted to exploit that. He wants to use a very specific kind of mic and mixer to create this specific sound. He runs an echo through every number, even though he is warned, you know, this is going to completely change the sound. Are you sure about that? But he actually likes the echoey and kind of slow down quality that it creates. And like you said, it did end up kind of being a nightmare then for the studio execs, because they were like, how are we actually going to market this? And another interesting element of the film is that it also shows Bruce Springsteen recording Born in the USA. Huh. And as he's recording it, literally the whole room is silent. There are chills in the air. I absolutely love this scene. Like everyone knows immediately, like the commercial potential of this number. And Bruce was all like, no, focus on Nebraska. I want Nebraska out. This is like really quite pivotal to me. And another interesting character here is we all know like Jeremy Strong from the likes of like Succession and stuff like that. And here he plays John Lando, who is Bruce Springsteen's manager. And there are these really interesting scenes where he's talking to his wife about, you know, the kind of demos and stuff that he's been receiving from the Nebraska album so far. And he talks to his wife about how Bruce is doing something really different here. It's darker, it's more intimate than ever before. And those kind of moments really give us an insight into Bruce's character and just how loyal John is to Bruce, because he does have to kind of come up against the studio execs who really just are thinking commercial, money.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was really quite blown away. I found it a really interesting kind of take on this kind of subject matter. The only part where I thought it was maybe a little weak was that I did feel like they wanted to kind of spotlight the whole idea of like mental health awareness and stuff like that. I don't know if that was like quite as well integrated into the movie, maybe because there were just so many focuses to it, and there's quite a bit of screen time devoted to this relationship between Bruce and Faye and that romantic storyline, and he kind of, you know, develops a relationship with her, and he spends a lot of time with her and her young daughter as well. So maybe there was just a bit too much going on in the film to kind of bring that in as well. But I still thought it was a very good movie. So yeah, I would recommend it. Yeah.
But it ends with Born in the USA, which isn't, that's the next album or the album after, or that's...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big enough fan to know the exact context behind it. But from what the film depicts, he was like looking at both starring and recording this hit single for this movie called Born in the USA. at the time. And that's what kind of led to the production of this record. And then that would have been released as a single and ended up obviously being the very big hit that we know it to be today.
Yeah, I absolutely loathe that song.
Really?
I absolutely loathe it. I think it's his worst song.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so funny.
Mostly because it's not about... Because it's about, you know...
It's so catchy.
But it's about somebody who's completely disillusioned, who's fought in Vietnam. It's about, like, you know, what has America ever done for me?
But
sonically, it's an anthem. So all the troglodytes going, born in the USA, you know, they're interpreting it as a completely different song.
I think
Springsteen himself has voiced some frustration about that.
But at the same time, how many Irish anthems you could say the same thing about, you know?
No, Irish anthems are always about people dying heroically for their country.
We sing them
and feck the Brits. That's what I'm saying. No, you are with an Irish anthem. Can't be misinterpreted. Casting news for Presumed Innocent 2, which I assume a completely different cast.
Yes, it is a different cast. I loved the first season. I thought this was brilliant. This is actually one of the original Apple TV hits. Like, they streamed more than any other drama at the time when season one came out. So I'm not surprised that there's a season two. The exec producer is J.J. Abrams as well. So, like, they have a really good team there. So in season one, we followed Jake Gyllenhaal, who I thought was amazing in it. She played like a state attorney who was accused of murdering his colleague, and she ended up, it turned out they were having an affair. Isn't that always the story? So that series of books, basically, there's two other books, but it's actually season two has nothing to do with that author, which is a strange decision. So it's a different book, and it's called Dissection of a Murder. That's the name of the book. And basically the plot is that a defense lawyer, who is going to be played by Rachel Brosnan, so she's the lead of this series, takes on her first murder case. It's the murder of a respected judge, and her husband is the prosecutor. So it's basically going to be the two of them against each other. But there's interesting cast in it. So John McGarrow just got announced there. He was most recently in Materialist. But we have a few Irish. We have Jack Rayner in there. So he's going to be in season two. I feel like he hasn't been in anything massively mainstream in a while. So it's good to see him back. Like, he hasn't been on any shows anyway, no streamers.
Yeah,
he's
done a few movies. There was a kind of a superhero-ish somebody had done. Powers One, he was somebody's brother.
Yes.
That made him remember the name.
Yeah, I remember actually writing the exclusive so long ago that he got Transformers. That was like the first big casting. And then he was in Sing Street here as well. But I feel like he might have taken a bit of a break for a while because I haven't seen him anything in a while. But he's going to be in the show. And then Fiona Shaw is in the show as well. She was obviously most recently in Bad Sisters. Yeah, I think it's going to be good because the first season was so, so good. And I think because it's based on another book and the fact that they've decided to go with a book that's not from that author, I'm guessing it's to do with the story, that they wanted to have a really good story. It seems like All I Like Is Legal Dramas, because this is obviously really, really
legal. Yeah, there's a theme here, all right, Ali. There certainly is.
But I love this. Like, this is like the little description. It's like, when Layla Reynolds is handed her first murder case, she's shocked at how profile it is. The murder of a well-respected, well-known judge. This shouldn't be the kind of case she's leading. It's way beyond her expertise, but the defendant is clear. He wants her and only her. So it's just like an interesting, I think it's going to be really, really interesting. What I loved about season one is that there was obviously a massive plot twist in the very last episode. So I'm guessing we can expect that again. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me that they're back. I think it's going to be good. And obviously, like I said, Jake Gyllenhaal starred in season one. He's an exec producer of season two.
Okay.
So that's also positive. He was so good. And Peter Sarsgaard was in that season two. That cast, it's actually really reminding me of, what was that cop show that Matthew McConaughey was in, and they rebooted it every season?
True Detective.
Yes. Yeah. It's giving me that kind of vibe. I feel like that's what they're trying to do, is that we're going to have different season with different well-known actors. I'm expecting more casting news than this, and that it's going to be just as stressful to watch, and we're all going to be trying to figure out who did it, like a very whodunit style.
The various views on the Springsteen movie. This is such a crock. You pick up a guitar and play. Why are you trying to put psychology into everything, says Mike. That would be a very short film, Mike. That would be about 5 minutes. Someone else says, the Springsteen movie sounds like the Kneecap movie, but without the crack. And someone else says, Born in the USA sounds like Springsteen trying to pass a kidney stone. You are listening to The Moncrief Show and Newstart. We'll take a break, back in a couple of minutes.
So Meisel's Dunkel is the second beer that we're tasting. So these beers are our cousins. So they're brewed with the same ale yeast. They go through the same fermentation process. But the colour of this beer is quite different. Now, the colour of the beer comes from the grains that are used in the beer. So there is wheat used in it, but they would also use dark malted barleys. And the way that the barley is made dark is by heating it. Hmm. So it goes through a process, a Maillard reaction. And that process is similar to what would happen in a lot of cooking processes. So in a bakery, if you're cooking meat and so on. So the flavours that you associate with things being cooked are the flavours that you get in this. And what you find is those flavours kind of come through a bit stronger. And they, while you still have similar fruit flavours, the banana, the soft fruit flavours in there, the flavours of burnt sugar, caramel, toffee, roast flavours are coming through on top. So both beers, both Hefeweiss beers, so they have the same foundation, but because the balance of the beers is quite different, the character of the dark malts comes through an awful lot more in the Dunkel Weiss. Now, what you've got with that then is, as you drink a little bit more of it, the other flavours start to come through as you adapt to the dark malt flavours. So you can get a kind of a creme brulee character with burnt sugar and then a kind of a caramel.
A toffee kind of a thing going on.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that can come through as kind of a bananas foster, which is bananas with caramelised.
Ain't you fancy sugar with your bananas foster? That's a little taste of the 1970s there in the glass kind of thing. Okay, it is lovely though. It should be said. We better move on to our second movie of the day. It is Frankenstein. Here's a scary clip.
Some of what I will tell you is fact. Some is not. But it is all true. What manner of creature is that? What manner of devil made him? I did.
Right. Does the film focus on the monster or on Frankenstein?
It actually focuses on half and half.
Right.
So the first half is all told from Victor Frankenstein's perspective. In this case, he's played by Oscar Isaac. He's kind of this impassionate, furious, self-centered, slightly mad scientist, and he becomes more and more mad as the movie progresses. Oscar Isaac is good in this, I would say, very good even, but I mean, Jacob Elordi like stole the show for me as the creature. People might remember he was in Netflix's The Kissing Booth trilogy, which I have seen, admittedly. He also played...
Oh, you watched all of that then?
I know, absolute rubbish. But he also played Elvis in Priscilla, he was in Saltburn, you know, the one that Barry Keoghan was like obsessed with. But this film, like, he is absolutely incredible in, like, he really, really shows his acting chops in it. As the monster, he's just, he really, really has you absolutely like crying for him. He is this kind of tragic character. He communicates such a range of emotions through his eyes, his face, even the way he like stands and walks, you know, his physicality. So it's a really, really gorgeous
performance. What does the monster look like? Because given that he's made from spare parts, does he look like that?
And I know you're curious, Sean, because Jacob Elordi is a very handsome young man.
He's gorgeous.
Yeah. What are they doing? So he's got like all makeup and stuff, and he's made up of like different limbs. Anyone who knows Frankenstein is aware of that. So yeah, he is made to be this like big imposing guy. And initially when I saw his performance, I thought that he was actually Douglas Jones, who's known for like playing monsters in the likes of Pan's Labyrinth, The Shape of Water. He plays the fish man and that and everything. But yeah, so he's completely physically transformed for this role and everything. I really quite liked Frankenstein. Now, I have to say, it is my kind of movie. Like, I love kind of fantasy, horror kind of films. I thought the costumes and the settings were just absolutely gorgeous. I love the themes that Del Toro is exploring here between life and death, the narrow kind of border between them, the ugliness and beauty that can be found with both. Now, I will say it is a long film. It's about 2.5 hours long.
Whoa.
It can be a little bit on the nose, but I just thought it was so, so beautiful. I got totally lost in it. I'll probably be watching it again when it comes out on Netflix.
Okay, some beautiful people, is not a description you'd expect for a film like this.
It's very moving. I was just so, so touched by it. So I absolutely adored it. And I'm a huge, huge fan of the Mary Shelley original novel from 1818. And I love this particular adaptation. But look, I know it's kind of a difficult sell because it is coming to Netflix, but I would urge people, if this sounds like the kind of film for you, do go and see it in the cinemas, because it'll only be out for a limited amount of time.
Okay, 2.5 hours. How long is the Springsteen movie, by the way?
It's just over 2 hours, I think.
Okay, so longer than an album. is what you can take from that. Thanks to Dean and Dee and Ali, because that's our lot for today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18-plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.